fish, 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 fishing. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said, fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Well, hello there, boys and girls. That was a quiet intro.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Usually, you know, I'm sitting there listening to the music, Elvin Bishop playing guitar and singing, Charlie Daniels on the fiddle, and, you know, it kind of gets me in a little bit of a mood. And I was actually reading and didn't notice the music was odd. You know, you get to a show. Today, Robert came up with me, so Robert's back on the show today.
Yeah, we got the old crowd back again.
Yeah, we got the old gangs back together, you know.
And I turned my microphone on. Holy mackerel.
You got your microphone and everything on?
Yeah, now you can hear me, boys and girls.
Okay. That was the ghost of RJ. Mm. You start talking about stuff. Now, I'm a little hard of hearing, and I was looking up some stuff for the show today, and all of a sudden, I'm hearing about Sturgeon Moon, like Sturgeon the fish, not like Surgeon, the guy, as RJ says, cut your kidneys out. What that, Robert? What are you doing?
Looking it up right now.
Oh, you're looking it up?
Yeah.
That's cheating. I thought you guys knew about it. You were talking. Okay, we got a cheating. Sturgeon Moon coming up.
I had to figure out why it was called that.
And?
According to the Farmer's Almanac, it comes from the fact that it's one of the largest moons of the summertime, and they relate it to the actual sturgeon fish that is one of the largest fish here in the United States. So for some reason, they decided to call it that. That was as far as I got.
Okay.
But it does actually have to do with the fish.
All right. But what does it have to do with it? From what you just said, I'm assuming it's the bigger moon of the year or the summer?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like they got the harvest moon, which they call that for, that's September or October is one of the harvest moons because that's when they start cutting down crops.
All right, and but so now is this something that's specific to
August.
June, just August?
Just August.
So if you have a full moon in August, it's a sturgeon moon.
Yep.
Right, and it's also a supermoon, and I forget what the exact definition of supermoon, but it's when the moon is the closest to the Earth, so it looks bigger, 7 to 12% bigger.
So we have a super sturgeon moon coming up.
Yeah.
When is this?
Thursday,
yeah.
Oh.
Well, today. What's the
today? Yeah, it's today. Hey, we're live. I forgot that. We're live.
Yes.
Yeah. It's tonight, boys and girls.
It's today. Yeah, the 11th.
The time to see it is as it's first rising. It's going to be giant in the sky, or at least so it'll seem that it's like really big. But through most of the night, you'll be able to go outside and read a newspaper.
Which is a bummer, though, because today, tomorrow, and Saturday are the peak of the Perseids or Perseidon.
Precipids.
Precipids, yeah. Meteor shower, which is like the best meteor shower of the entire year in the United States.
Yeah, and it's also
you're not going to be able to see what's coming to destroy us as well as you could if it was dark out.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't have to go outside and close my eyes and see the destruction raining upon the earth.
No.
I can just say, okay, I'm not going to be able to see it, just wait to die.
There's a big moon.
There's a big moon.
Yeah. But this is like the epic full moon of the year.
It is,
I always look forward to this one because you can have 50 to 100 shooting stars an hour during its peak time.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, and it usually doesn't coincide with the full moon.
Right.
A lot of years it's with the new moon, and it's like phenomenal to lay down outside and you can see 7 to 10 meteors every hour.
Heather and I tried that one year. We went out during that, and her and I are sitting out in the yard looking, and finally, you know, you lay down and you put up something on the side where the street lights are. We had a piece of cardboard so it would darken it out a little bit, and we were actually starting to be able to see the meteors.
Right.
It's just weird that if, let's say, you had a piece of pipe that was 8 or 10 inches across, 2 or 3 feet long, if you put that over your face when you look up, you see an incredible amount of stuff that you couldn't see otherwise. If say you attached a hood to it, went over your head, so you took out the immediate light around your face,
yeah.
and you were able to look up. It's like if you're fall into a well. Okay, you fall into a well, you fall down 80 feet into the ground, and you're laying there, obviously unhurt, because that wouldn't bother you. But you're laying there on the bottom, and look up, you can see the stars.
Right.
Because being in that long chute. But if you're really into watching the meteors and stuff, get something to, even a cardboard box, and just open both ends of it, and it will really increase what you can see. Oh. Sounds ridiculous, but it works.
It really works. And I know it's funny starting off the conversation about the moon and shooting stars and all that stuff, but it truly affects all of nature. You know,
yeah,
not including
because
fishing.
As the meteors hit the Earth tonight, there's going to be, you know, doom and destruction. And
yeah, just ask the dinosaurs how it affects.
The dollar's not going to be the world reserve currency, and life as we know it ends, and we'll all be, you know, plowing fields with horses and living on free-range chickens in our backyard. So, you know, that's all that's going to happen tonight. No big deal.
Well, theoretically, the Gulf of Mexico was created by a big meteor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't have Florida. We wouldn't have the fishing and types of fishing that we do and the big desert that we have of being a big flat bowl going out into the Gulf. You know, so that affects us. And then, of course,
you have to wonder what the Gulf was like prior to that meteor, because there had to be water there of some kind.
I would think so.
But, you know, because it was enlarged and changed when that meteor that killed the dinosaurs hit over by the Yucatan, it blew all that bottom feature out, and that's why it's deeper, you know, some spots and all that. But it is kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's one of the hardest things for people to realize about. They come to Southwest Florida, and they're going to go ocean fishing. Now, the nearest ocean's, what, 150 miles from here?
To the east.
Yeah, it's east of us, 150 miles. You go over there. On this coast, if you go out 3 miles, you're probably in almost 30 feet of water. On the east coast of Florida, if you go out 3 miles, you're in 600 feet of water. They have a continental shelf. It drops off. It's an ocean. And the tides work every 6 hours. You can go down to the store and buy a clock that will tell you when the next tides are going to be. Now, they don't tell you the height of the tide, but they do tell you when the tide's going to either be high or low. Once you get it set, it'll just run, and the clock every 6 hours and something will say, okay, here's high tide or low tide. And tide clocks work great on the west coast of Florida. And it's really simple to get them to work good. You take a stick and put it in the ground, tie a string to the end of it, and hang the tide clock over the side of the canal. And when the water covers it, it's high tide. When the water's not covering it, it's low tide.
I was wondering where he was going with this.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they work great.
Makes perfectly good sense to me.
Put it out there, hang it over the canal, and when the water's over it, it's high tide. When the water's under it, it's low tide.
There you have it.
People have the mistaken idea, and I hear this all the time. Well, it's going to be high tide. I want to get out when I got a lot of water. And high tide has no correlation with a lot of water or deep water. There are times during the month when you can have high tides that don't have as much water as low tides. Or low tides on, say, the 17th that are higher than a high tide on the 21st.
Right.
That's just an arbitrary thing, not truth. But I did bring a couple of tide charts here, because now last month in July, we actually had a day with one tide change, days with two tide changes, days with three, and days with four. Now, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, I have personally seen that many tide changes during the course of a day. None in six are possible. Five is a one in a couple of decade experience, but we've lived and died by tide charts, the weather patterns, you know, how it's going to affect the business. My end of this is the business of fishing. You know, I have to turn a profit, make payroll, buy insurance, have the, you know, pay rent, do all this stuff. It's a lot of business involved. And that's why we have fishing licenses, because there's a big, what'd you get zapped?
Yeah, it did.
Well, you got electrocuted by your microphone, huh?
I did. I'm not touching that again. But I got curly hair now. That's cool.
RJ, your beard went gray. Okay. Anyway, where the heck was I? Okay. Talking about something with tides. But when you live on the Atlantic or the Pacific, you have four tide changes a day. High, low, high, low. Or low, high, you, however you want to look at it. But on the west coast of Florida, we are not on an ocean. We are on the Gulf of Mexico. Not only is the physical characteristics different, the tides are different. And I think they call it a spring tide because the water hits a springboard and just kind of bounces around. The tides come into the Gulf of Mexico. They hit Texas. They hit Florida. They just kind of bounce back and forth. It's, that's as technical as I can get to it because I've never really found the answer to it. But if we look on August and from Monday the 1st to Friday the 5th, there was four tide changes every day. Now, on Saturday the 6th, there was only three tide changes. On Monday the 8th and Tuesday the 9th, as well as Wednesday the 10th, so from the 1st to the 5th, there was four tide changes. On the 6th, there was three tide changes. From the 7th to the 10th, there was two tide changes. And then we go back to 2 days, the 11th and 12th, at four tide changes. The 13th has three tide changes. And then from the 14th down to the 18th, we got four tide changes, then three, and then two, and two, and two. And we finish out with a bunch of kind of normal. But without a tide chart, you cannot look at the tide today and say, okay, the tide was high at 1 o'clock, and tomorrow it'll be high around 1 o'clock. There's no correlation whatsoever. So what's the date today? Let's see. Today is the 11th. So this morning at 5:30 a.m., was the first tide of the day, a high tide at 1.3 feet. That's critical. Remember that. Remember I said high tide does not mean a lot of water and low tide does not mean a little bit of water? And this is a very good example of this. The high tide at 5:30 this morning was at 1.3 feet above 0.0 or mean low, low water. At 8:44, there was a low tide at 1.2, one-tenth of a foot lower. So that's like 1.1 inches difference between the high tide and the low tide. But then from that low tide this morning at 8:04, it goes up to at 2:42 in the afternoon to a 2.6. 2.6 is 6 inches higher than our average high tide. So you're literally gaining a whole bunch of water. That high tide has a lot of water in it. For me, if it's not a 1.5 or more, it's not a high tide. From 0.9 to 1.4, that's your average water height. Anything below a 0.9 is a low tide. Anything with a minus in front of it, super low tides. Now, if you're in the middle of the harbor and there's 10 feet of water and you get a 1.5 tide, doesn't make a darn bit of difference. There's, for all practical boating, the difference between 10 and 11 foot is nothing. But now let's go back onto the flats where most of us do our fishing. And the average water depth is 1 to 2 feet. So if the average low tide depth there is at 1.0, 1 foot of water, and now you get a high tide at a 1.5, now you got 2.5 feet of water on that flat. Almost any boat can get into that. I mean, under ridiculous. But at 2.5 feet of water, there's going to be more fish there. The fish are going to be going across the flats feeding. You can get your boat up in there. You can go catch these fish. So do you get there at high tide? Because that's when you have a lot of water. And when you ask most people, say the people with that 21 to 24-foot boat, and they got like a 16, 18-inch draft, and they want to get there at high tide so that they can get back on the flats to go fishing. Question I always ask them, what happens, RJ, what happens after high tide?
Low tide.
So the water is falling, right?
That's right.
So do you want to get your boat on the flat and go there when as soon as you get there, you will have less water that whole time, so you might not get back out? Or do you want to go there at low tide and just follow the water in so that as you go in, you have more and more water the whole time you're there? Which one makes more sense?
I want to go in there on an incoming tide.
Right. So and you get there at low tide, and as soon as you can get up in there, you follow the water in.
Yeah.
And then once high tide hits,
you got to be very aware that that water's going to leave.
Yeah.
And so if you're looking at the chart for today, if you went in at 5:30 in the morning and then the low tide was at 8:04, you probably wouldn't have noticed a difference on the flat, right?
That's why it's so critical to know that height number.
But if you did this in the afternoon at 2:42, which is super high tide, it's 2.6, the low tide is 0.2.
So you're not getting out of there.
You ain't getting out of there. No, Cito.
And well, even then, depending on where you're at, Cito isn't getting to you.
They ain't going to get there either, right?
Yeah.
Unless they got a half a mile of rope with them.
Right.
And this time of year, I don't want to get stuck out there in the afternoon going into nightfall.
No.
Oh, yeah, the no-see-ums would be just wonderful. At least you wouldn't be alone.
Yes,
yeah.
This is true.
You would not feel lonely out there.
Right, and if you're into bloodletting therapy, that's the way to do it.
Oh, yeah, you know, like it's the latest rage for COVID. Just go out and lay in the mangrove swamp and let the no-see-ums and mosquitoes suck it all out of you, you know?
Yeah, no, not
so
for me.
That's the best way to get rid of COVID. Take it from me. Mm. Well, it's as valid as anybody else is talking about.
This is true.
So it's critical that if you're on a boat, you need to have a tide chart.
Or a tide graph,
something that's going to let you know what's going to happen after the good stuff.
And because, how much or how little.
Yeah.
And the one thing about this, let's put it into catching perspective. If you've got a 1.3 and you're going several hours later to 1.2, no water is moving. You are not going to perceive the water coming in or going out, whatever it's doing.
Right. Well, good point. So it's not pulling bait fish out of mangroves or anything like that.
It is. The fishing is going to suck. It is. You are going to think you just got the latest, greatest fudgesicle you ever had because it sucks. And, you know, Hoover's got nothing on that kind of tide. So you're going to get there, and you think, okay, I'm going to fish that tide change, and nothing happens. You will wait for hours. It's not even worth it. At those kind of tides, I'm going to go to the artificial reef, see if there's any snapper around, maybe up around one of the bridges, see if I can find some sheephead or snapper there. But that's about all you've got in your box to go fish for. Because the snook, the trout, the cobia, the redfish, all of them, ladyfish, jacks, everything is just, nothing's happened.
Right.
Because as the tide comes in or out, but as the tide's moving, it washes up, as it gets started, it's washing sand from behind rocks. It's pulling, moving the seaweed one way. And just like if you're going to fish at the spillway dams, the best time for that is when it hasn't rained and the dam hasn't run for a month or two. And then all of a sudden we get a lot of water and the water starts boiling over the dam. It is washing over grasshoppers, bugs, minnows, just all kinds of food gets picked up by that rushing water, boils over the dam, and those fish lay underneath that dam, and it's smorgasbord time. They're feeding like crazy.
Yeah, and they've got a buffet at that point because it's all the different species that are getting washed over.
Frogs, and you name it, everything comes over, and they're eating it all.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing happens with each tide change. As that water begins, say it was going left to right. Now, as it starts going right to left, all that stuff that was piled up on the backside of the rocks, the plants that were laid over that way, all that stuff is kind of been doing that a while, so nothing new is happening. But as the water changes direction, it starts boiling a lot of these little tiny mites, baby crabs, itty-bitty shrimp, larval-sized shrimp, you know. I mean, the stuff we can barely even see starts getting pushed out from the side of the rock it was on, gets pushed up into the water, and it starts settling on the other side. So just like a creek that's been down for several months, and then all of a sudden you get a big flooding rain, and it starts washing everything out of it, the only difference is it washes everything one way for a while, then it stops, everything settles down, and then it washes it back the other way. So this kind of boiling up the food process happens every time the tide changes.
Right. And the
right?
Other, yeah, absolutely. The other benefit you have is this time of year, we're at, what, pretty darn close to our maximum heat capacity for the water. Usually August and September are pretty much about as maxed out as it's going to get.
August is usually the max, and September it might hold or dissipate a little.
Right. So hot water holds less oxygen. So if you get stronger tides and you get moving water, it creates a little bit of turbidity in that area, which can create a little bit more oxygen that can keep those fish definitely more active in that particular area versus a slack tide.
For that first bit of the tide change,
yeah.
Because everything that was flowing left is now flowing right, so it's the water's washing in different areas and creating, like you say, turbidity or turbulence in the water that allows the water to absorb a little more oxygen.
Yeah. I mean, it's not significant, but it's enough.
You get some from the deeper water where there is still some oxygen. It's a little cooler as the tide's coming in. It's pushing all of the water in front of it. As it moves into the shallows, that deeper water mixes with the shallower water. And for a real short period of time, you get some more oxygen in the water.
And it's all beneficial. And what we're talking about is getting you those few more hits. And like G.I. Joe says, knowing is half the battle. If you're not understanding how the water works, how the tides work, why it's important to know this, why it's important to know that, well, as we saw from 5:30 in the morning till basically 8 o'clock in the morning, the water didn't move. It sat there still. So if you were going to get up and say, okay, I'm putting all the energy. I get up at 4 o'clock. I load the boat. I get down to the boat ramp. I'm out on the water. It's 5:30, an hour before daybreak. 6:30, the sun's coming up. The fish are going to start biting. No, they're not.
Right.
You just wasted that time.
Right.
Whereas if you would have slept in for a while and you got on the water by 7:30, and then you were in your fishing spot by 8 o'clock, a little while after that, tide changes, the water starts moving, the whole food chain starts happening. So what we're trying to do is get you to put your effort into a time where you're likely to catch fish. Now, the best time to go fishing is whenever you have the chance. But if you had the chance to go at 5 o'clock that morning or 8:30, I'm going to tell you 8:30 was a lot better bet.
Right. And absolutely.
That's kind of the point of all this. You know, I get rambling on and I'm going into all these things about 1.4s and what 2s and all this kind of stuff, saying you have to know these heights. And that's why. So you get to sleep in a little bit and you've got, say, 70% chance of having a good fishing trip, rather than sitting there for a few hours, and by the time you say, oh, screw this, they're not going to bite, I'm going home, the fish would have just started in a little while.
Right.
So that's what we're trying to do, is get you to utilize your time as well as possible. So
And if, like you were saying about the graphs, like, because, I mean, a tide chart is great, but you have to kind of understand it a little bit and be taught it really. But if you have an app where it shows the actual graphs, you want one that looks more like a roller coaster ride. You know, if you're looking at the lines, the higher the peaks and the higher the valleys that are closer together, that's when you have the most water movement. But then when you got those little slight plateaus is what you would have like this morning, where it would just be almost a straight line.
Yeah, you want to avoid the straight lines. Doesn't matter where they are.
No, another thing that I have to ask is, like, they got this 2.1 and 1.1. A lot of people don't understand where that number actually comes from.
First, we got to go to a chart. Now, this is any chart that's done for Charlotte Harbor, the Gulf of Mexico, excluding lakes, but any tidal area, whether it's on the east coast of Florida, the west coast, any tidal area has a normal low tide. And that is designated as 0.0. Now, just for Southwest Florida, basically Charlotte Harbor area, our high tide is 2.0. Now, the reason you have to know that 0.0 is low tide, that's what makes all these numbers more interesting. Because now you know you're going to have 1.2 feet more than what the chart says you will, or 2.6 feet, or minus 6 inches, whatever it happens to be. But it's all based off of 0.0 mean lower low water. Now, the TV news, they like to sensationalize everything.
No.
They started this, what, right around Irma, I think.
Yeah.
They, for decades, literally as long as I had been studying weather, tides, wind effects, the fetch, all this stuff, it was always the storm surge was done above the high tide mark. So wherever the high tide mark was, if they say you're getting 4 feet of storm surge, it's in our area, that's from 2.0 feet and up, the high tide mark. Now they've changed the phrasing just to scare people. To me, it's a scare phrase. 4 feet above normally dry ground. Now, when I first started hearing this, I'm thinking, normally, what are you talking about, normally dry ground?
Are we talking about 41 out here?
Yeah, what are you talking about? This is terrifying stuff.
Yeah.
And the media do this to get you interested so that you go, what do you mean? I got 4 feet of water over normally dry ground? Is that my backyard? No, it literally is exactly the same as what they said since time immemorial. 4 feet above the high tide mark. But because people didn't really know what the high tide mark was anyway, they just started saying normally dry ground. Because if it's above the high tide, it is normally dry.
Yeah.
So,
and they're talking about the beach now. They're not talking about the roadbed. They're not talking about your neighbor's front yard. They're talking about you're at the beach, and this is where the sand is normally dry all the time.
Yeah, the waves come up, and they hit this spot, and that's all they usually go to.
Right.
This is the level of the water. Now, if they're saying you're going to have a 9-foot storm surge, it's going to be 9 feet from there up. But now, always remember, water spreads out. It doesn't rise in a wall unless there's a wave coming. It goes in and then spreads out. So it's going to fill all the areas with 1 foot, and then it's going to fill all the areas where it can hold 2 foot, and then it can fill all the areas with 3, 4, 5. All these other places got to be full before that water comes up, because water is wants to stay level. It doesn't want to rise up. That's what freaks me out about. When the tide comes in, it's not coming in, it's coming up. The moon's pulling the water away from the Earth, causing it to mound or pull up in kind of a bubble. And as that bubble moves forward, the water's literally lifting up. It's not being pushed forward or backwards. It's like, say, if you had a suction cup on the water and you picked it up, and then you just move that suction cup. That's what's really weird.
Right, and the size of that water dome that you're talking about.
Water dome, I like that.
It's the equivalent of the diameter of the moon. So that's how big of a lump is being pulled up 2 feet, if that's going to be the high tide at that point. So you're right, it's going to pull up water almost vertically, in a sense. And then the water's going to roll down into the lower places.
Right. And what's really weird about it is the high tide starts out at Boca Grande, but so does the low tide. It's the water's, the water comes in from the Gulf and is pulled back by the Gulf. So it's not, you don't get the water rushing up and then falling back. It's more like it's being sucked back.
Yeah.
It's a very minor distinction. But if you actually spend a couple minutes and you think about it, it really screws with your brain. Both the high and low tides start out in the Gulf. They don't start, you can picture the high tide starting out there and throwing a big bunch of water up at us, but then the water got to slide back to where it was.
Yeah.
Once the moon gets over land, the water just slides back. So both the high and low tides start out there. That messes my brain up. But Redfish is set to open with a slot limit of 18 to 27 on September 1st.
Yeah.
Now, that's exciting news. I haven't heard that. That's great.
And Snook is going to open up September 1st.
Wow.
So they've decided to open Snook and Redfish September 1st. I've been reading about it this morning.
Did they make it official with the Snook?
As far as I know.
Because I know the Redfish, but the Snook, from what I got 2 weeks ago or whatever, they were hemming and hawing, still hadn't set it in stone yet.
As far as I know, according to the website, it opened September 1st.
Okay.
But this is the new Florida, and FWC is being run by somebody's sister's brother-in-law's barber's husband who needed a job. They're not qualified environmentalists. They're not fishing industry people. They're not even commercial fishing people. They're literally just some random people that needed a job, and they have somebody in the government did them a favor and threw them a bone and said, here, go work for FWC.
How bad could they screw it up was the concept.
Yeah, how ridiculously bad could it get? It's bad. These are really stupid people that use Facebook to make their decisions. I am totally embarrassed. It's yeah. That floor, duh. That's where this comes into. But I'm sure somebody, there's got to be at least one person with the average intelligence of a mosquito on there. I haven't met them yet, but
probably
I'm sure one.
Probably outvoted, though.
Yeah. So, anyway, if you go back in time and they have an escapement percentage of fish that they want to attain, on the west coast of Florida, 40%, and this is actually throughout Florida, 40% of the fish, if they can escape and get past the slot limit, the numbers of fish would be good. And so they test this by going out and netting fish up around Snook, Redfish, all this kind of stuff. And they count how many fish were in that net. And then they go back later in the year and count how many fish are in the net. And they get an average of how many fish are in all these areas by how many fish they net. And they use the big, they take a net off the boat, and it goes all the way around. They run it all the way around. It's a big purse seine.
Purse seine.
So what it is one long net that goes out and then all the way around an area, and then that's drawn back to the boat, and they count every fish in it, large and small, to see what fish are in there. They count, they pick it out, they identify the species, measure it, throw it back in the water. Take it out, measure it, throw it back in the water. Certain fish are put away so that they can be dissected, check the, what's that little bone they check? The
otolith.
The otolith. They actually, gut several of the fish, check their internal organs, stuff like that. You know, got to be cruel to be kind. So yeah. In order to make sure the fish population's healthy, they kill a few.
Yeah, you don't learn life without knowing death.
Right. We deal in life, but death's a part of that.
Yeah.
Man, you know, so many people, this last year, the amount of people that passed away is staggering.
Right.
Then I'm reading on one of the news reports, and I thought, oh, this is just more garbage news, that there's an extra 40% people dying in 21 and into 22. Forget COVID, forget everything. Just 40% more people are dying.
Huh.
I was like, And it's actually something that's real.
Right.
And they have no idea why.
No.
Conspiracy theories. COVID vaccines, not taking a vaccine, dust in the air, whatever. But
not wearing your aluminum foil hat.
Not wearing your aluminum foil hat can cause 40% more death.
Right.
But weird stuff going on. But anyway, when they're doing all this with the fish, that's how they get an average of increases. But as far as I'm aware, and there's a couple years where after that red tide event, they would not allow the stock assessments out as public knowledge. For as far back as I can remember, I could call FWC, get stock assessments. You could find out anything you wanted. Unbelievably open and transparent. When that red tide hit and they did all the closures, they would not post any of the stock assessments because the facts did not agree with the narrative. So this was a case of making the narrative the main. And if you eliminate all the facts, then you can say whatever you want. And it seems to be a trend in this country right now. But they're starting to re-release some of the stuff, stock assessments and other things.
Yeah, but they were releasing them after all of their public hearings were done and they had already made their decision. Then they were releasing the papers. It was like, really? There's no way.
Well, we're not allowed to be informed to help make decisions. We are here to do what we're told.
Right.
That's the way the government looks at us now. We are just too stupid to be able to figure anything out. And I got news for you. Anyway, moving on. But so as far as I'm aware of, we have never dropped below the 40% mark. Now, the east coast of Florida has never gone above the 40% mark. We have always had an excess of fish going through the slot limit, becoming adults where theoretically you weren't supposed to keep them. East coast of Florida has never managed to hit their 40% escapement rate, and yet they have bigger slot limits, bigger bag limits than the west coast of Florida.
Right. And that's on most
can
of their
can somebody
species.
Say political friends?
Yeah. Yeah, there's something weird to that.
This is just, they pay more money to the politicians than we do. That's all.
Well, and if they're questioning that, the simple fact of the matter is look at it, because they've actually now, with redfish opening them up, they've put them into zones the way they did trout.
Mm-hmm.
And the Panhandle, which is closest to Tallahassee, gets a bigger bag limit than we do.
It's not closer to Tallahassee. That's not the important issue. Closer to Mississippi and Louisiana.
Closer to all the other states, too.
Because Louisiana has a much higher bag limit. Mississippi has a 3 per person bag limit. I think Louisiana is 5 or something like that.
Yeah, 5.
It's like 5, 3, and then you get to Florida, there's only 1.
Right.
So Florida was losing tourism dollars to Mississippi, Louisiana. The Panhandle lost a lot of their tourist business. The fishermen just said, why the heck would I go to Florida when I can just go a couple miles over and I can keep more fish?
Right.
Spend the same amount of money, fish basically the same kind of waters, but I can have more fish. So they were losing tourist dollars. Anybody seeing a pattern here?
Imagine that.
Wait a minute. If your neighbors can keep more fish, so you're losing dollars in tourism, well, you can have more fish there.
Well, I think it's kind of cool that they got the fish trained to stay in certain zones.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're doing fine here in zone number 5. Our fish are all here, and they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. But
as you go further south, away from the other states who have higher bag limits, like Georgia and all these other ones, the bag limits get less, and the slot limits get smaller.
Yeah.
But as you get towards the other places where they have to compete for dollars, everything loosens up a little bit. No corruption there. No, none that I can see. It's just good science.
Right.
And, you know, and just to say, the guys that are out doing the netting and the assessments and the autopsies and all the rest of that stuff, those are our scientists. And the information they gather is usually pretty damn accurate. It's just it leaves their hands.
We have a group. A lot of the scientists in Florida are not eco-idiots. They're literally there doing their job and turning in the numbers. But these are the numbers people. These are the ones who, like, count how many seagrass are in an area and how many redfish are here or there. These are the numbers guys, and they do a very good job. Where you get into the agenda science is the people we're talking about. There is no good science in Florida right now for fish management. All of this is the same garbage they spouted in 1987-88. Not one thing changed. Very, very little has changed. I can't say not one thing, because there's a couple little things. But they're doing, things have not gotten any better, but they keep doing the exact same thing they were doing since the 80s. Now, I've proposed several new ideas, and they always come up. And I just have I just write down their answers for them when I'll say, what about this? And I say, wait a minute, here, you can just read off of this. Or I'll show it to somebody next to me and said, watch, this is what they're going to say. But they've been saying the same stuff for decades, and it hasn't made things better. This is lousy science. This is bad science. This is eco-idiot stuff. Let's do different things. Let's try it for a couple years. See if it works. If it doesn't, we can always go back to what we're doing now. Let's make the slot limits at the old age of the fish. We know trout only live 5 to 7 years. They get maybe 28 inches long. So take 28, go down two, three inches. There's your slot limit for trout. All the rest of them get to be thrown back in the water so they can spawn and live and not die of old age. Oh, no, let's not make anything. Snook should be the same way. Redfish, it doesn't matter. They don't live here.
Right.
Do whatever you want to. Put the size limit from 12 to 15 or from 25 to 30. What difference does it make? You're not going to change anything.
No.
But
it's a highly migratory species. People right. don't realize that.
And but why not? Let's try and improve this. Why do status quo, status quo? Now, I agree that we've never gone below, and I would bet, I would actually be able to bet money that even when the red tide ended the world and all of the fish we had died, we never went below the 40%.
Right.
I would bet. But you can't prove that because they locked up the numbers. So, anyway, one thing I do want to go into, that was kind of a weird, convoluted show. I didn't mean it to go that way.
Not really. It was a lot of good information because it is confusing because we've got so many new people, and especially from, I mean, it used to be years ago, it was a lot of people from the Midwest. Now we've got a lot of people from the Eastern Seaboard, and those people from the Eastern Seaboard are used to that clock of every 6 hours the tide changes. They come here, and now they're completely confused, let alone not having any knowledge. They've got knowledge that is totally opposite of what we've got.
And they really think high tide means a lot of water, low tide means no water.
Yeah.
They don't have a clue how this part of Florida works.
And then they tell you you can't catch any fish here.
Yeah. Fishing's so much better where I was. You spent 40 years learning it.
Yeah.
I can guarantee when you were 8, 6, 8, 10 years old learning to fish, you didn't catch as many fish as you did when you were 30 or 40 years old.
Right.
Guarantee it.
Yeah.
But after 30 or 40 years of fishing the exact same areas, you kind of figured it out a little bit.
You better be good or else you just need to find a new hobby.
Yeah, right. Golf might be a really good thing if you haven't figured it out by then. Then you come down here, and in 2 months or a month or three trips, you expect to do what you did after 40 years of learning what to do up there.
Right.
Now, I can tell you, when I was doing charters, I struggled for a while, but then I got into the rhythm, figured it out, and I was catching as many fish as anybody and having very few bad days on the water year round. But it takes time. But speaking of good and bad days on the water, the world's number one live bait, dead bait jig head to me is the Rockport Rattler.
I'd agree with that.
I don't know. Let me see if this will actually work. Can you hear anything?
Mm-hmm.
It's really in the background. Can you turn that up? Okay, you're going to turn it up and then turn it back down because I'll blow everybody's brains out. Let me know when you're going up. Okay, so you guys actually could hear that, right?
Yes.
That is the rattle in the jig head. There's three jig heads in a pack. I was shaking the pack back and forth. But people are just using a tremendous amount of jig heads for live shrimp, dead shrimp, squid, chunks of pinfish, ladyfish, blue crabs. Now, the big difference is if you've got a jig head on and you put your bait on there with a quarter-ounce jig head versus having a hook and a quarter-ounce sinker a foot and a half away from it. The big difference here is that when a fish bites the hook and he starts to move and then he feels that sinker starting to pull back on it, he's like, wait a minute, something's wrong here. You know, I grab this bait, I start moving it, and all of a sudden I feel this weight, and he wants to try and spit it out. He wants, this is it, it's over. But when he goes after a jig head and he picks up the bait, he's getting the weight of the bait and the jig head as the weight of the food he's eating.
Wow, that makes perfectly good sense.
So as he picks it up, that weight is just part of what he's eating. It's not, okay, I've got food, now, oops, something's trying to stop me. That's why jig heads are so effective as a weight-hook combination versus a hook and sinker combination. That's why people tend to start, they get more bites. As they get the bites, they're actually getting more fish on the line. And one of the big things about this is that by using a Rockport Rattler, you can have your bait out there and cast it out. You got your bait on there. If the fish picks it up, he's not going to notice the weight of the jig head. But if you don't get a bite, the way we use a popping cork on the surface to get their attention is the way a Rockport Rattler works on the bottom to get their attention again. So you tighten your line up, if you're going to move your bait, and sharply lift the tip of your rod, which pops that Rockport Rattler jig head off the bottom and lets it fall back. At the same time, you're getting that ch-ch-ch-ch sound of the rattles going off in there. So it's making that little escapey sound. I don't really know what kind of sound it would be, but let's say it's a wounded bait sound. But it gets attention. It's kind of like, it doesn't have to be a good sound to get your attention. You're sitting on your back porch, evening time, you get your feet up, you're sipping a cocktail, and all of a sudden, a few houses down, somebody lets off a half a dozen firecrackers. Did it get your attention? Doesn't have to be a good sound. It can be a bad sound and still get your attention.
Oh, absolutely.
It could have been a group of kids laughing a couple houses over. Got your attention. Could be a few firecrackers going off. Got your attention. You got up and you looked. Either way.
Right, and you got to remember, too, underwater, that little click-click that you're hearing here in the air, I think the factor is 8. 8 times louder.
I think it's 50.
Is it 50 times louder?
I think it's 50.
Wow.
And I know it's either 50 or 500, so I'm sure it's 50.
But it's a lot louder underwater, and it also carries a lot further.
Yeah.
So that little rattling noise, you got a redfish hanging up or a snook hanging way back in the mangroves, he's going to hear it, and he's going to want to know what it is.
And this is the time of year for dead sticking. Now, when you get really good with a Rockport Rattler, you learn to just be able to pop it up, have it make some noise, and fall back in almost the exact same place. If you can manage to only move it a couple of inches and still get it to pop up, make noise, and fall back down, this is the best way to fish dead bait at this time of year. And dead bait is the number one type of bait. Robert?
Absolutely. I mean, the fish are going, I mean, we already talked about the rain and the tides and stuff, but the water is super black. The fish can't see very well. And they're lethargic because of how hot it is. So they're wanting wanting that guaranteed food source. And a lot of these fish have come off of their summertime spawning, so now they know they're going in towards the fall and winter, which means they have to start to build up the fat reserves to get back in.
Well, they just spent all that time having big sex parties, you know?
Right.
And from what I remember a couple of centuries ago,
it's called a
that was exhausting.
That was called a porgy, right?
Called a what?
A porgy?
A porgy, yes. They go out there and they were having porgies. And when you get out of a big, you know, 2-month-long porgy, you're exhausted. You need to have a, you need to, you know, make a trip to Perkins, you
yeah.
know. But yeah. by not having any forward motion or moving it away, the fish can find it easier. It made noise. The more you can make it make noise but not move away from where it was, the more fish you're going to catch. So, Fish and Frank here, Robert over there, RJ up in the golden chrome towers of power overlooking the world.
With the electric microphones.
Yeah.
I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line.